As our listeners are no doubt aware, this year, Tovshin Nun Zayin, marks a number of anniversaries. Not only is it 200 years since the printing of the Tanya in Tov Kuf Nun Zayin, and 100 years since the founding of Tumchet Mimim in Tov Resh Nun Zayin, but as it applies to our continuing tales of the Baal Shem Tov, it's also the beginning of 300 years from the birth of the Baal Shem Tov in Shnas Nachas, or Tov Nun Ches, and another anniversary, perhaps not as well known, is that it's Yud Beis Tammuz. Tov Shin Zayin was the time when the first volume of Sefer HaZichroinus first came out, as is to be seen from the letter of the Rebbe and the introduction to the Zichroinus. So it's exactly 50 years that we now are celebrating from the time of the Zichroinus. I thought it would be very fitting that we begin a series then relating tales of the Baal Shem Tov, or more particularly about one of the primary and most sterling Hasidim of the Baal Shem Tov. And I'm referring to none other than Rav Baruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, and how he became a Chassid, as well as how his family became Hasidim of the Baal Shem Tov. Most of it will be taken from Sefer HaZichroinus. However, a portion towards the end of this rather lengthy tale, which will be told in quite a number of installments, will be have been gleaned from various sichas and maimorim, mostly sichas, maimorim, and rishimis of the previous Lubavitch Rebbe, as found as well in the Sefer HaToldos. And so we begin the fascinating story of how the Alter Rebbe's father, Rav Baruch, became a Chosid, the lineage of the Alter Rebbe's mother, the Rebbe Tznadivke, and how she had a connection to Chassidus, as well as a fascinating part of this tale about the Rebbe's aunt, the Alter Rebbe's aunt, Verileia, her husband, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok, and the grandfather of the Alter Rebbe, is Rabbi Shneur Zalman, as well as another grandfather, Rabbi Baruch Batlan, or as he was known as Rabbi Baruch Viazner. But since his tale is lengthy in and of itself, that tale will be told in Yirtzeh Hashem after we tell the tale of the second Baruch, Rabbi Baruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe. Our story begins with the great Rabbi and Goin, the great sage, Rabbi Moshe, who lived in the city of Pozen, which at that time was a sort of independent state for itself. Rav Moshe was known not only for his vast erudition and his great Torah knowledge, but also for his tremendous wealth. Rav Moshe was also blessed with many sons and daughters. One of his sons was called Shneur Zalman, after whom the Alter Rebbe is named. Shneur Zalman was entirely different from Rabbi Moshe's other sons. While his other sons were hale and hearty, Rabbi Moshe's son, Shneur Zalman, was delicate and quite fragile from the time he was born. Although his nature was such that he was not the healthiest of children, this did not interfere with his hasmoda, his diligence, and his study of Torah by day and by night. Whenever he would find a moment, and he would devote himself to the study of Torah. Aside from his assiduous study, Rabbi Shneur Zalman was also very fond of bedidus, of solitude. While his other brothers devoted themselves to business, Shneur Zalman devoted himself entirely to limit our Torah to the study of Torah. When Shneur Zalman became 20 years of age, he married the daughter of a certain Rabboruch, who was nicknamed Rabboruch Batlin or Rabboruch Vyazner, whom we shall hear about in later installments. And Rabboruch was known as Batlin probably because he lived a life which was so far removed from worldly matters. This Baruch was very likely a poor man, and Rav Moshe must have agreed to the marriage not so much because of any aspect of wealth that Baruch possessed, but because of his fine spiritual qualities. And so it was that instead of Shneur Zalman being supported of caste, as we say, that he was to be supported by the father-in-law, as was the custom at that time, he lived together with his wife for 6 years after his marriage at the home of his father, Rav Moshe. It seems that Rav Moshe and Shneur Zalman's brothers want Shneur Zalman to become a businessman like themselves. But Shneur Zalman politely declined, and rather preferred to make a living, to eke out a poor living, as it were, out of teaching. And from that time on, he refused altogether to accept support from his rich father and his rich brothers. Rav Moshe and his entire family might have peacefully remained in the city of Poznan, the city-state of Poznan, where they lived, had they not sprung up at that time the beginning of the so-called Haskalah movement, which was indeed a danger to the Jewish faith. Rav Moshe and some of the other inhabitants of Poznan began to fear that they would not be able to continue serving God and learning Torah as before in such an environment, and so they decided to leave the city of Poznan and to wander from there, hoping to eventually reach White Russia, where there were very large centers of Jewish learning and Jewish life. And so it was that Rav Moshe and his family wandered from town to town until they came to White Russia. Rav Moshe and one of his sons settled in Minsk. Two other of his sons, Yehuda and Mordechai, settled in Orsha, which was in the district of Mogilev. Shneur Zalman and his wife and their daughter Leah accompanied those families of Poznan by whom he was engaged as a Melamed, as a teacher. And all these families, together with Shneur Zalman, his wife, and their daughter Dvora Leah, settled in Vitebsk, and Shneur Zalman continued with his teaching. He remained a Melamed. 3 years later, Shneur Zalman's wife gave birth to a son, and they named him Baruch after his grandfather, Baruch the Batlin, who had died in Poznan prior to their departure, and it's this Rav Baruch who we will be telling about at length, the father of the Alter Rebbe. Unlike his sickly father, Baruch was a healthy child and developed very well, both physically as well as mentally. Shneur Zalman, the Melamed of Shneur Zalman, lived in one of the poor and narrow streets on the outskirts of Vitebsk, which was not far from the river Dvina. Spreading out from the outskirts of Vitebsk, there were gardens, fields, meadows, orchards, and the like, where the people of the city would plant. Poverty was therefore felt less in this part of town, where one was so near to nature and to Hashem. Shneur Zalman had always been a lover of Hashem's creation. He always wanted to be close to Hashem's Bria, to Hashem's creation, and he implanted this feeling in his son Baruch from the time Baruch was very, very young. The beautiful river Dvina and the majestic gardens and fields and meadows and orchards became deeply engraved in the mind of little Baruch from the time that he was a small child. This, however, did not at all disturb him from learning Torah, for when he was but 4 years old, his father carried him, wrapped in a talis, to a Melamed Dardikid, to an elementary teacher. For Abshner Zalman himself taught children who were already more advanced. And Baruch needed a preparatory course before he would be able to be taught by his father. Baruch soon showed great acuity and keenness in his learning. He had barely been studying for a year when he knew already a good deal of Chumash very well. Very soon, Reb Shneur Zalman transferred Baruch to a second Melamed, a higher Melamed, who began teaching the little Baruch Gemara. When Baruch was 7 years old, Reb Shneur Zalman took him into his own school and placed him among his other Talmidim, among his other pupils. For 3 years, Baruch studied under his father's tutelage and demonstrated remarkable ability and acumen in his studies. Baruch quickly overtook and passed his chaverim lesafsol, his companions, who were all very much older than he. Apart from the fact that Reb Shneur Zalman taught his son, he in addition often spent time with him, just the two of them spending time together. Reb Shneur Zalman would take his small son Baruch for long walks on the banks of the river Dvina. They would walk through fields and meadows, and Reb Shneur Zalman always told his son Baruch about the Torah and about the wonder of Hashem's Briah, the wonder of Hashem's creation. These walks under the open sky, with Hashem's beautiful world before their eyes, evoked within Baruch's heart a great love for Hashem's creation and a desire to be alone and commune with Hashem's creation far from people. And thus it was that from his early youth, Baruch showed an inclination towards solitude. When Baruch became Bar Mitzvah, he was already thoroughly versed in several Siddurim and several orders of Mishnayis, knowing them by heart, and he also knew several tractates of Gemara, several tractates of Talmud, he knew that by heart as well. Baruch was at a stage where he could now study on his own without the help of a teacher. This his father allowed him to do, but he would indicate what he should learn and how he should arrange his studies, providing him a derech and limud, a path in his studies. Now that Baruch was not tied to a particular teacher or school, he used to take his Gemara or any other books recommended by his father and go off to the riverbank, and there, on a stone or stretched out on the soft grass, he would delve deeply into his Torah studies. Far from being a deterrent, the beauty of Hashem's creation encouraged him in his studies. The splashing of the flowing water, the chirping of the birds, and the buzz of the bees all formed one chorus of Hashem's beautiful creation, which harmonized with Baruch's own singing, with which he accompanied his learning. A year after Baruch's Bar Mitzvah, his mother, Nishtogadach, became seriously ill with a fever, and several months later died. Soon after this, his father, Reb Shneur Zalman, also took ill, and within 6 months, he too passed away. Baruch was now a kailach tikiyosim, he was doubly orphaned. The death of both his parents had a shattering effect upon him. The pain and the sorrow of the 14-year-old boy absolutely cut him to shreds. whether it was because he was so bound and tied with his parents in his love for them, particularly with his father, or whether it was simply because he suddenly felt so lonely, he walked about in a world of desolation. During the period of Avelus, during the period of mourning, Baruch, as the only son left to say Kaddish, used to go to the Beis HaMedrash and lead the davening. He also used to learn Mishnayos for the souls of his dear departed parents. With all this, however, he could not still his great pain. It was obvious to all that young Baruch was losing his health, and they saw the effect that this tragic misfortune had upon his spirits. In Vitebsk, Baruch had an aunt, Freda, whose husband was called Kaddish. They took Baruch and his sister Dvoralea to live with them, and did their best to be kind and friendly to them. Dvoralea was more or less comforted, but Baruch could find no peace of mind, even in the home of his kind relatives. And so it was that one day Baruch informed his uncle Kaddish and his aunt Freda and his sister Dvoralea that he had decided to leave Vitebsk. "I'll go someplace of where I can study Torah," he said. "Where will you go to? You are too young to wander about," they tried to plead to him. "Better stay with us. You'll lack for nothing, and you could sit and learn here." However, all their talk, all their pleadings, all their monstrations were in vain. Young Baruch had already decided what he intended to do and would not allow anyone to change his mind. A few days passed, and Baruch left Vitebsk without leaving any trace behind him. Meanwhile, the tragic news of the death of his son, Reb Shneur Zalman, and Reb Shneur Zalman's wife, reached Reb Moshe, who, as we know, had settled in Minsk, where he carried on his business with great success. Reb Moshe immediately sent a special messenger to Vitebsk to bring his two orphaned grandchildren to live with him, and they would literally have everything they wished for. However, when this messenger arrived in Vitebsk, Baruch had already left town, and no one knew which direction he had taken. The messenger could not take Dvoralea either, for her aunt and uncle were childless and did not want to let her go, and so Dvoralea stayed with them until she married. Meanwhile, Baruch wandered about the towns and townlets around Vitebsk and could find no permanent place of rest. And so it was that for 3 years the Baruch wandered in this manner. He spent some time in the towns of the Bromzil, Kalisk, and other small towns. Wherever he came, the Baruch would settle down in the Beis HaMedrash to study, but absolutely refused to accept support either from public or private sources. As was then the custom, anyone who studied in the Beis HaMedrash was invited to have a day's meals at the home of one or another of the local Jews. And if the student did not wish to sleep in the Beis HaMedrash, a room was found for him in a private home. Baruch, however, was not interested in any of these arrangements. But how then could he live? He solved the problem by becoming a woodcutter and water carrier, or else he assisted the stall holders on market days. Baruch was not ashamed to do any kind of honest work. Nothing was beneath him, nor was anything too hard for him to do. Baruch followed the view of our Chachomim, where it says, "Pshut nevelosch b'shuk v'al titztarach lebedies." Better to skin a carcass in the marketplace than having to come on to the charity of others. This manner of conduct was not understood by many people, and few bothered to discover what was behind the Baruch's motives for acting in this manner. Many put him down as eccentric and dismissed him from their minds with a shrug of the shoulder and a gesture of the hand, while others didn't even pay him that attention and took no notice of him whatsoever. Baruch, on his part, was not at all concerned about the matter. Let people think of him what they would, or not at all, as long as they left him in peace to carry on in his own sweet way. And so it was that nobody would disturb Baruch, even in the slightest degree, wherever he went, and Baruch would wander forth from one townlet to another, where he again took up his own particular way of life, studying day and night at the Beis HaMedrash, and earning his modest livelihood by means of the hardest tasks he could obtain, so long as it pays for its humble needs. After Baruch had wandered through a whole range of townlets, he eventually arrived in Lozhne. There he soon settled down to study in the large Beis HaMedrash. Baruch had saved a little bit of money from the various hard jobs which he had performed in all the townlets where he had been. However small had been his earnings, his daily needs had been even smaller. A small piece of dry bread, something with the bread, and Baruch was satisfied. Shoes, clothing, these were matters of little importance to him. That is why he managed to bring with him to Lozhne a small nest egg, which would keep him supplied with his humble requirements for some time. Thus, Baruch was able to settle down to his studies in the Beis HaMedrash, undisturbed, and with studying with great zeal. This was truly a very happy period for this 17-year-old lad. No worries about making a living and free to study by day and by night. When a youth such as Baruch, an unknown stranger, comes along and settles down and studies Torah so assiduously in the Beis HaMedrash, demanding nothing from anybody, even the value of a penny, it was bound to attract attention. Ezra, the shamus of the Beis HaMedrash, was the first to take notice of the young Talmud Chochem. He asked Baruch if he was sure he wouldn't like someone to supply him with meals and other necessities. Baruch declared that he neither desired nor needed help from anyone. He had all he required. Baruch, having made the Beis HaMedrash his home, often helped the Shamish in his various tasks. He helped him to sweep the Beis HaMedrash, he brought water for the basin and carried out the water in which the worshippers had washed their hands. He helped to light the lamps and candles before Shabbos and on other days of the week. In fact, he almost became Ezra's assistant. Although the Shamish wanted to pay him for his work, Baruch refused any kind of payment, saying he wanted to help as a favor. And anyway, he didn't need any reward. When he would need anything for his physical well-being, he could always go out and work. But at the moment, he was short of nothing. Ezra shrugged his shoulders. He had never met anyone quite like Baruch before. In great admiration, he spoke about him to Eliezer Zundel, the Gabbai of the Beis HaMedrash. The other regular Mispalim of the Beis HaMedrash also heard about Baruch and became interested in the young lad who studied so keenly in their Beis HaMedrash. "Who is he? Where does he come from?" asked Eliezer Zundel, the Gabbai. The Shamish shrugged his shoulders. He really didn't know. "I just can't get any information out of him," said Ezra. "It seems he doesn't want to tell." The Gabbai himself tried to find out from Baruch in a friendly chat. He also offered to look after him. Baruch, however, showed no wish to talk of his family and relatives, where he had come from and why he had chosen to come to Lozhne, and he politely declined the Gabbai's help. The Gabbai saw that he wasn't getting anywhere with Baruch, who seemed very stubborn. He decided that Baruch must be a little strange. And going to the Shamash said, I can't do anything with him. You try again. We must find out something about him. We can't just let him go hungry. So Ezra, here encouraged, again tried to press Baruch for some personal information. The Shamash also declined any longer to accept Baruch's refusals of his invitations and insisted that he come with him to eat. It's not right for anyone to endure such a manner of living, Ezra said to Baruch. But Baruch remained adamant. When Baruch saw that he would not be able to get out of Ezra's clutches, he left the large Beis HaMedrash and went to the smaller one on the outskirts of the city. There, no one bothered him. He could carry on as he wished. Baruch saw, though, that the little money he had brought with him to Lozhne, and with which he had been keeping his body and soul together, was dwindling slowly but surely. Soon he would not have even enough to buy bread. The continuation of the tale of Rav Baruch, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, in the next installment.